This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
And later on, The Fire Next Time, Ferguson and Beyond, Communities Organized.
But now,
Walmart arrests dozens who sit down for $15 an hour and full-time hours.
Workers say they want changes. If not, they'll plan other protests on Black Friday. There were two demonstrations at different locations earlier today.
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
Even after authorities threatened to arrest them for blocking the streets, these protesters wouldn't back down. In fact, many of them sat down, refusing to disperse. 28 were taken into custody. They wanted to make a point.
Why is it worth it for you to get arrested at this point?
I have two sons, and it's their future that I'm concerned about, mainly.
Walmart employees and their supporters picketed the Pico Rivera store, demanding higher wages.
No peace!
They claim to make about $12.50 an hour, roughly $25,000 a year. They're calling for an increase to $15 an hour, and workers want full-time schedules.
The workers who are intimidated and bullied, three people just lost their job last week because they were talking about getting fair wages.
Walmart presented us with another side of the story. The company released this statement, which read in part, "Walmart is proud to be a company of opportunity. Our workers have access to unparalleled advancement opportunities, cash bonuses, a 401k plan.
Walmart is setting the trend for all companies. So if we don't change it now, the future of our youth are in dire straits."
And you've been listening to a report on Walmart arrests from dozens who sat in. And now Martha Sellers and Maria Camarena, Walmart employees, talk about the workers and their supporters arrested outside a Walmart store calling on the company and its owners, the Waltons, to end the illegal threats to and retaliation against workers calling for $15 an hour and consistent full-time work at the country's largest private employer.
Hundreds of supporters rallied outside the store in Pico Rivera, California, the site of the first Walmart strikes in 2012, to boy the strikers. Meanwhile, the Walmart behemoth brings the $16 billion in annual profits, and its owners build on their $150 billion in wealth. The majority of Walmart workers are paid less than $25,000 a year.
Martha and Maria, this extraordinary demonstration that took place, the mobilization of the workers. So Walmart says, hey, there's unprecedented opportunity and benefit to being a Walmart worker. Who wants to take it from there? How would you answer? Walmart, the Waltons. Martha, Maria?
Well, I know my grandmother used to say, if you work hard, you'll make it in life, but she never knew about Walmart.
Whoa, that's quite an indictment.
They say there's opportunities. I've been there 11 years. This last year, we have new management in my personal store, and now I have seen advancement in my store for the first time in 11 years.
And Maria? How would you respond to Walmart's proclamation of the wonders of its working conditions and the remarkable opportunities of advancement and benefit to the workers?
You wouldn't say they have really a whole lot of opportunities. I guess the only opportunities is if, you know, they decide to move you up. Like, you get a manager position. I've worked at Walmart for 8 years. I mean, what I've seen is that the associates aren't really respected at the workplace. The workers are being overworked and pressured to get things done in a small amount of time, and then being blamed for whatever goes wrong. Even when they're not given any directions or on how to do the job or...
And what's your job?
I had three positions. I had one where I was working in the produce department as a sales associate, and then another one where I was working in the meat department as a sales associate, and then another, currently now, I'm working in stationery, celebration, fabrics, and crafts.
What were the working conditions like that you found oppressive that drew you into a protest?
It was heavy labor. I was being pressured to do it on my own. You know, when that happens, you get hurt at your job. That, and then also Walmart's supposed to give you like 8 hours in between from when you have to come to work the next day. But a lot of times they would be giving us only 7 hours, and then we'd have to come back to work again. Or sometimes it would be 6 hours. A lot of people didn't know that they were supposed to have 8 hours in between, so they would just come in. I don't think that Walmart does a very good job on telling people their policies.
Walmart doesn't want to educate. Walmart wants to keep us all dumb so that we don't know the rules and we don't know the laws. If they could schedule you 4 hours between your shifts, they would. Walmart is one of the reasons why the lunch shuts you off of the registers, because they never gave people lunches. Now the register shuts you down and you get in trouble for not taking your lunch on in a timely manner. Well, before, Walmart wasn't giving any lunches in a timely manner. So Walmart now is using the law against us because they broke the law.
Martha, one of the complaints about the was accented at the demonstration was understaffing, and that workers were being silenced for complaining about that. Tell us a bit about the sit-down and how that tied into this theme.
Well, the sit-down, most of us had tape on our mouths. That represented management trying to stifle us in speaking out against the ills, because all they do is want to intimidate and threaten you with your job, threaten you and belittle you in front of customers and your coworkers, to dehumanize you, where you don't even feel like you have a choice. You're just there. Because you're working and you feel grateful that you have a job and you have income, but you're still not making it. And then you feel like, I can't even afford to put extra gas in my car to go look for another job. We fight for more hours. We fight for better pay. When they were talking about raising the minimum wage here in California to $9 an hour, somebody asked me, if Walmart was to raise it to $20 an hour, well, then they would cut your hours to 4 hours a day, and you would still be in a hole. You would still be that low-wage worker, because they don't want their workers to feel like they're valued.
That's what I feel that our Walmart organization does. They encourage us to respect ourselves and to have value and to know that we're worthy of respect. You know?
We are worth more. We deserve it. We work hard. It's not the work we do. It's the pressure mounted because of the work. You have this much to do in less time. And then you get in trouble because you don't get it done.
Yeah, and then a lot of times they'll give you things that the supervisors are supposed to do, and then they don't back you up when they're the ones that put you to do like something that they're supposed to do. They don't back you up because you don't get your own job done. They don't back you up for them pulling you to do their own job.
Exactly. This is what you have to do. And, oh, can you do this too, and do this, and do this? So you're giving 4 different things to do, and you can't get them all done. If there was more people, there would be more people doing the work.
You know, they tried to coach me for supposedly productivity, for not being productive enough. I'm under like 4 departments, and they're expecting me to have all that done. I'm on my shift.
Okay, and for folks that don't know, a coaching is a bad thing. It's called a coaching for improvement, but it's really a bad thing. 3 coaches and you're out the door.
Is that a demerit, coaching?
It's really a write-up. It's really, you get 1, 2, 3, you're out the door. So whatever you want to call like, that, you get 3 coaches, you're gone.
Yeah, they're supposed to talk to you about how you can improve your performance. That's what they're for.
But it's usually, and then because you had that coaching before, let's try and work on getting this done. And then they pull you again in 6 or 7 different directions, and you still can't get all the work done they want you to get done. If 10 people can get this work done in a timely manner, they expect 5 people to get it done.
And Martha,
plus help the customers.
And Martha, have people been disciplined for speaking out? Walmart says they haven't.
Yes, they have. They can blame it on other things, and they usually try to blame it on other things, but usually it's for speaking out. Absolutely. Now, on their exit papers, they don't put for speaking out. They put job performance. They'll put because they did this 3 months ago, and Evelyn is a perfect example. She was recently terminated for shipping something out, and she didn't even do the shipping. She got the pallet ready to be shipped, and gave the paperwork to someone else to do it. But then 3 months now has passed, and she's the one terminated for doing this incorrectly because there was chemicals on there. She had no clue how to even do the paperwork to have this pallet picked up for shipment.
This is someone who works with you?
That person is still there.
This is someone who works with you?
They work with Maria.
Hmm.
I'm very close with Evelyn. Evelyn is my inspiration, has been and will continue to be my inspiration.
And what is she the inspiration for? Let's get into the whole issue of what mobilized both you, Martha, and Maria to participate in this demonstrations, which are really quite remarkable.
Evelyn is, I call her the little mighty bulldog because she's short and she's just a powerhouse and she won't back down. She goes on the wire and looks things up for me and find policy. And that's just from over the phone. And I really appreciate that because I don't know how to do all of that, but I'm learning. So I need to spend more time. I should have spent more time learning over at her store on how to do that myself. But now I will get in touch and find out how and write directions down. But the reason I got involved in this, when I was asking for more hours after my husband passed away, my managers laughed at me and were cutting me down to like 28 hours a week. I couldn't pay my bills. I couldn't, if I was to pay my rent, I would like have $12 to my name for 2 weeks to live on and put gas in my car. And I went, this is not the way this great, big, great corporation should be treating its workers. And it has to stop. It has to change. And I stepped up and I'm speaking out and I've spoke up ever since. Because it's not just about me. This is about every worker that works at Walmart. This is a Walmart worker thing and they are really bringing the standards of living down for the workers. Do you disrespect the clerk behind the counter? Just because it's Walmart, we get disrespected? No, we have a job. We have a job to do. We love our job. We love our customers. But when our own company disrespects us, when our own company won't let us survive, when our own company won't let us eat, put gas in our car, feed our families, it's time for this company to take responsibility and accountability for its workers and get them off of welfare, off of government assistance, and let them live their lives productively. Well, and that's why I fight.
You just gave us one of the best reasons and most beautiful testimonials of these courageous, hardworking people who sat down, some of whom were arrested, who have built support in the community for certainly a 15-hour wage and full-time hours. And I hope we can keep in touch with the both of you, Martha Sellers and Maria Camarena, to see how your ongoing struggle goes and to really ultimately break the back of this backward management that rakes in so much money, one of the largest employers in the world, and offers so little to the hardworking people who really generate the profits. Thank you both for taking some time to be with us and applaud your commitment to the struggle, to the workers, and to your families by what you did.
Can I interrupt and say one more thing, please?
Sure.
Because during the Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth had a quote, and it's still true today. They can outlaw the organization, but they can't outlaw the movement of a people determined to be free.
Wow.
And that I live by with that's inspires me every day. I have it several places in my house, in my car, and it just continues to inspire me.
And you've inspired us, and we are going to talk more in the future because you will live by that creed, and many of the people who hear us tonight will adopt it as well. Thank you so much, Martha Sellers and Maria Camarena, for being with us and all that you do.
Well, thank you.
People will have a chance also to do more protests on the day after Thanksgiving for nationwide protests at Walmart throughout the country.
And we'll bring you that.
In a world where most Walmart workers make less than $25,000 a year, where good jobs with full-time schedules are out of reach, America is about to meet the heroes we need. Walmart workers will stand up for 15 at full time. The people will fight back.
The whole world's watching.
Taking to the streets at Walmart's nationwide.
Walmart! All Walmart!
America, are you ready for a new hero?
All Walmart!
Coming this Black Friday to a Walmart near you.
And now we turn our attention to the fire next time Ferguson and beyond communities organize.
This is weird to hold. How many bullets does it take for a cop to shoot and kill an innocent black child? 15, 16, empty the clip, reload and pull the trigger back down. 17, 18, 19, frightening when you hear that rat-a-tat sound. 26, 27, every 28 hours put another body under that ground. Where the governor, he absent. With the prosecutor and the captain. They say the process is democratic, but we getting bullets even though we got the battle. Where's Malcolm? Where's Chewy? Where's Pac? Where's Big? Where's Tukey? Where's Jay? Where's Nas? Where's Snoop B? Blame Nixon. He's guilty with the whole damn system. Left Mike in the street 4 hours, definition of a lynching. And because I ain't from down here, they going to try to tell me how to mind my business. I saw him dead with a bullet in his head. You can go tell the feds I'm a goddamn witness. It's war on us, 44's on us, and he's still telling us be peaceful. Every week another black youth murdered, and he still got the nerve to tell us we equal. And if I stand up just to put my hands up as a sign of protest, we evil. But it's blood in the street and blood on your hands. This time you answer the people. What up, y'all?
Let's listen to Tenjiwe Maharis, just recently returned from Geneva, where Ferguson was being discussed at a review of torture by the United Nations.
I want to talk a little bit about Geneva. I just came back. What we did in Geneva, or at least what we hoped to have done in Geneva, and what the parents, Leslie and Michael, what they hope to achieve by going to Geneva. But before I talk about Geneva, I want to talk a little bit about Ferguson. There's this saying that some of our folks say there, you know, you don't have to just turn up here, you know, you have to turn up at home. That is said there. But for a lot of people who know of Ferguson simply from pictures or from video, social media or traditional media, the truth is that you don't actually have the whole picture. It's why the stories directly from some of the folks there, from various different ages, but particularly from the young people that have consistently been out there. You know, there's a chant called A1 since day one, which means you've been out there since the very first day. Now we're looking at, 98, 99 days. Hearing what happened from their mouths is so critical, because I do believe that Ferguson is a signal to us around the country that things are escalating, but police response and the militarization of the police is starting to escalate in this country. And I think Ferguson, for me, actually, is a signal to us. Like, it's an awakening of what has been happening to our people of African descent throughout this country and throughout history, but it's indicating what is going to happen. Because the truth is, I've been organizing for a while, and I've never seen what I saw in Ferguson. In fact, I'm still, till this day, and I was only out there for maybe like 20, 25 days, and it was scattered. Still, I'm still trying to process everything that I saw. But when you're in the middle of a protest, of a moment of resistance, and what they don't talk about, at times there were live bullets. And when you see a young man go down, shot in the stomach with a live bullet, and people are trying to engage in a conversation on how to get the body out, just to get it to a hospital, because there are tanks on both sides. There are lines of AK-47s on both sides. The moment you decide to approach, right, there's just a live round that just went off. It's not just rubber bullets. It's not just tear gas. Well, you are in a state of war. And so you have in those moments people trying to figure out how to prevent a death. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then the other thing is, I hate the term tear gas, because tear gas, it normalizes what is actually a very powerful chemical that, if you've never been hit by it before, makes you feel like your entire body is burning. It's supposed to really debilitate you, destabilize you. And when you see young people as young as 11, 12, 13 years old get hit with tear gas, they don't know what's happened. The term tear gas doesn't enter into their mind. And so literally you see some of them just start screaming and crying. And many times you have a lot of asthmatics, young people with respiratory problems.
Very true.
And then you see in those moments them beginning to not be able to breathe. Again, a lot of people saw tanks. A lot of people saw weapons. But you did not see how many people got followed home, how many people's houses got run into. The fact that the family of Michael Brown still live under the threat of fear. Just to go to Geneva, Leslie and Michael, they were risking themselves and had to deal with that burden, the amount of fear that they have to endure right now. And so for me, again, there are Fergusons throughout this country, but Ferguson is an indicator that something is coming, and so we must prepare for it. When I left Ferguson, I realized that they are coming for us. They came for us in Ferguson. They came for our young people in Ferguson. And they are coming for us around the country. And so it's the awakening. Ferguson should be our awakening.
Yes.
But it, for me, it's so important to elevate. Because again, till this day, the first time I went to Ferguson, I was there probably like a week and a half. I was not myself for about 2 weeks. The amount of mental and emotional trauma that even I had endured just being there for a small amount of time. And now you have young people that have been there for almost 100 days. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit about that. And briefly, when I was there, most of my time was focused on the safe house that was built, the safe space. This was just a space that was built. I mean, it was a church. It was a space that was built just so folks can come when they were injured. Right? So when they were tear gassed, or they were shot by, you know, rubber bullets, or when they were just attacked. It was just a safe space where they can go. It was also a space where you can get food, but it was a space just where people can feel like they had community and they can get some refuge. And this was a space that was repeatedly, over and over and over again, targeted by this militarized police presence. I mean, they would line our safe space with guns. They would run up in our safe space when folks weren't there. I mean, just again, the amount of aggression that a lot of folks witnessed in Ferguson, in St. Louis, it should tell us what we need to prepare for. And so the question of what we need to prepare for, the moment we decide that we will not go home, whether it's New York, whether it's LA, the moment we decide to fight back with our bodies, to stay put, to stay present, they will come for us. That is what Ferguson has taught us. What Ferguson has also taught us is the beauty of courage and the beauty of what it means to stand by your people because of a deep sense of love for yourself and your community. Love is to, when you see your people being brutalized and hurt, is to not leave their side. That's what we saw in Ferguson. That's what we can see and we have seen in New York. But this is something that we need to incorporate into our organizing. Resistance is not leaving. So, Geneva, what did we do in Geneva? In Geneva, the United States was being reviewed on torture by the United Nations. Michael Brown's mother, Leslie McSpadden, and Michael Brown's father, Michael Brown Sr., went to go testify to the UN about the death of their son. I'm not going to go too into it. What I will say is those two people are the most powerful people I know. Till this day, Michael Brown Sr. has yet to be able to even look at the image that most of us has seen of Michael Brown's body laying on the street. Michael Brown Sr. cannot bring himself to even look at that image. Leslie is more powerful than she will ever know. She has more courage than anyone I think could ever really realize. And she sat and she was there and on multiple accounts would talk about what it meant to lose her son, but really what it meant for her to continue to fight for justice for the case, particularly Darren Wilson, but to prevent another family from having to suffer the way they have. The most beautiful part of the experience for me was being in their presence. But the other part that was really beautiful was the act of resistance that happened when the U.S. government was responding directly to questions around its torture record. I don't know if folks have seen the images, but the Department of Justice was testifying around use of force. Did not talk about Michael Brown, kind of really touched on Ferguson, touched on the use of tasers, touched on Chicago, touched on New York, but would not speak specifically to any of what was presented before them. And a group called We Charge Genocide, it's a group of young folks, young black folks, who when the DOJ was testifying, stood up. This is something that doesn't really happen that often at the UN, but stood up in protest while the Department of Justice was testifying, and stood up with their fists up like this while the DOJ was testifying. To the extent, if you haven't seen images, I tell you to go see images. I mean, it really shocked the entire delegation of folks in the U.S. that came, representing various different issues. But more than that, to hear the representative from the Department of Justice start to tremble in her voice because she was not prepared for that type of resistance to take place was absolutely extraordinary. But what was even more beautiful was watching the Ferguson delegation that was in the room start to put their fists up in the assembly room. And then watching slowly a sprinkle of people, again, while the Department of Justice is still testifying, start to stand up in solidarity with their fists up because of those who cannot be there because the police killed them. Yeah. It was beautiful. And the UN, unfortunately, called a whole bunch of security officers. And then some of us had to deal with about 20 UN security officers, you know, ready to take these folks out of the room. Luckily, we got to a place where that did not happen. But it was, if you have not seen the images, I beg you to see the images, because the other part that was so beautiful is that Michael Brown's parents were there sitting while a sprinkle throughout the room of people while the U.S. government was testifying was standing as an act of resistance while the U.S. government trembled as they spoke, tripping over their words, passing the mic, because no one wanted to talk anymore. So I'll stop there.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.